Hi everyone, you are now listening to our podcast, For a While. We are just two Filipina 30-somethings now currently based elsewhere in the world, trying to find our way and figuring out what that means for us. Our podcast is where we take a little break to regroup, share what we've learned, and find new ways to move forward. I'm Kirsty.
And I'm Andrea, and if you hear something that resonates, we'd love for you to let us know.
So how are you?
Honestly, it's been a full day.
Ooh, what have you been up to?
So I biked with a friend, and then so my husband was teaching his friend how to ride a bike so I could have more biking buddies, basically. And then we ate, and then we baked up a storm, and then delivered some cookies. So
sounds so fun though. Like, it sounds like lots of activities, but also kind of festive mood and holiday
activities.
So it's not kind of working all day.
So YouTube was playing all these Christmas songs the whole afternoon, and I don't know if you're that type of person who, you know, listens to Christmas songs.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. At the beginning of December, we were already listening to Christmas songs in the car.
Are you a Jose Mari Chan person?
No, I'm not. I mean, I think the only time I really hear Jose Mari Chan is when we're at the malls.
Yeah. In September.
Yeah, then you hear it. Or like even back at school, right? You had to sing songs like, which one was that? You know, the Whenever I See Girls and Boys Sailing on Tunes in the Street.
The classic, yeah. Yes.
You had to sing that as a child, right?
I don't actually remember singing that.
I remember
performing that.
Probably not performing. It's probably just something we had to do in the classroom. But I vaguely remember having to memorize it.
I must have blocked it out.
But I feel like everyone knows the words to it.
Yeah. I mean, after hearing it for like a third of the year, your whole life.
For how many years? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's like the national anthem.
The child in the manger as he sleeps. As he sleeps, yeah.
Yeah.
What other songs does he have? I'm trying to think. Pasko na Sendako, right?
Maybe.
That as well.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I wouldn't actually be able to remember a song out of the blue, but if you started singing or if I started hearing the song, I would probably be able to continue it.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I just Googled Jose Mari Chan. And apart from being a singer-songwriter, he is also chairman and CEO of Binalbaga and Isabella Sugar Company and A-Chan Sugar Corporation. So apparently he's a sugar mogul as well, and I didn't know that.
I feel like he's competing with Mariah Carey in terms of reigning Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
Bard.
I was just going to say that I think I'm more of a Mariah person. Do you know last night, do you know what I was googling?
No.
I was googling how to be a diva like Mariah Carey.
Wow.
I don't know why. I just suddenly thought, I know why. So I was watching this YouTube video and people were talking about Mariah's cookies, which is basically this line of cookies that is delivery only. I don't know if it's only in California or if it's all of the US, that she basically just partnered up with like a chef baker person / company, and they've partnered up, and then they've used her name, I guess, and they call it Mariah's Cookies. And I was watching this YouTube video and they were doing like a taste test of the different flavors, and apparently it was delish. Like, it was so good. And I started googling her, And then I googled how to be a diva like her. All the really diva things that she's done, which is quite fun. So
which ones resonated with you? Which tips do you think you can follow?
I don't know. A lot of it were really excessive. If they were true, like things on her rider when she's guesting or touring were just a bit much. There was one that said something about she had this aquarium with fish, mm-hmm. but then her fish were on a different like sleeping schedule as her, and she didn't like it. So she changed all her fish so that they woke up and slept the same time as she did. And I was like, how do you even figure that out? I don't understand. How do you do that?
Wow.
So I don't know that that's necessarily true. There was one that I really liked, which was that she has this alter ego who has black hair and has a British accent, who first appeared in, you know, her music video, Heartbreaker. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Where she fights herself, right? And it's like her alter ego called, I think it's called Bianca Storm or something. And she's apparently like the evil alter ego, which I kind of enjoyed. It's kind of like Beyonce has Sasha Fierce, right? Who apparently is who she becomes when she's on stage. She's like a different person.
I feel like that's really common among performers.
Yeah. I think that's true. And I think for me, to a lesser degree, like if I'm doing a presentation, something as simple as a presentation, I kind of hype myself up a little bit. And then I kind of get into the zone of presenting mode. I think when I'm not presenting, I'm a lot more like, chill. Maybe I talk a bit more like this, but when I get into presenting, it's, I think I definitely take on a more like authoritative tone,
mm-hmm.
which I think is important, right? When you're claiming to be an authority on what you're speaking about. But yeah, I think I change it up a little bit because I think that's easier for me as well to get through the presentation.
I think that makes sense. Like your voice changes depending on the situation.
Yeah, I agree. It's like, you know, Paris Hilton, she has her different voices.
Yeah. Did you watch the documentary?
I did. I think the documentary was really good in like giving a real insight into her life. Because I think previously, because there have been other like reality shows and documentaries on her, but they have been very surface, only focusing on partying and the simple life and her businesses. But this one was really like, whoa, okay, that makes you kind of watch it and think, okay, I get it now. Like this makes sense now.
Mm-hmm.
Did you enjoy
it? Yeah, I really did. And it's really sad to hear their experiences. And I also watched her interview with Drew Barrymore for her talk show.
Yeah. And I saw that.
It was like Drew ended up appreciating her traumatic experience. And then Paris Hilton was like, no, actually, I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
Yeah. I don't know if it's simply because they had such... As much as it was like there were some bits that were quite similar in their experiences, it seems Drew Barrymore's was like she was so young and she was like hooked on drugs and alcohol at like 14. And so it was a matter of this is what will save her life kind of thing. And maybe she sees it that way. But I think it seems like this just this extreme measure to take for a teenager who might be a little rebellious, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I watched A Therapist Reacts to Paris Hilton's documentary.
Yeah, is it Psychology in Seattle?
Yes, yeah. I love that one.
I know. I think, like, he's awesome. I think he's just very level-headed. I watched all the 90 Day Fiancé Ed and Rose ones. Did you watch them?
I only ever watched his reaction to Paris Hilton because I don't actually know the other shows that he reacts to.
Yeah, I watched, like you said, the Paris Hilton one, but then I saw that he had those 90 Day Fiancé and I only watched a few of the Ed and Rose ones just because they got really popular a few months ago. because Rose is Filipino. But basically, I think for that season, apparently, from what I can see, I didn't watch any of the other couples. I just watched them. But they were the breakout star, basically, because out of everyone, I think she was the one who kind of really stood up for herself. And I think that the man, Ed, wasn't expecting her to, because like, oh, she came from this like less well-off background, from a third world country, and he thought that he could like boss her around. And I don't know, he was just quite rude to her, I think, and she was able to kind of just say, no, I'm not taking this. This is not okay. This is not acceptable behavior from you. You can't treat me this way, all of that stuff. So
I should watch that then.
It's good to watch. Like, there are some bits that are hilarious and it's really, really funny. And then other bits where it's like just kind of, you know, just sad. And yeah. But okay. I think the psychology, I forgot what his name is, what the doctor's name is, but psychology in Seattle, his summary basically of the Ed and Rose is that Rose seems to be like very in touch with her emotions and is able to express it quite frankly and honestly and straight to the point, which is good for her. But then that man, Ed, seems to have, because he's an older man, I think he's in his 50s and she's in her 20s. And he was saying that Ed seems to have a lot of this like issues from past relationships and past experiences that he's just bringing to the table, and he's projecting, and it's like he's saying one thing, but what he's actually trying to say is something a little bit different, and then it gets masked as something else, that kind of thing.
That's super insightful.
Yeah, so I thought it was really good.
I think for me, like, what I have yet to master is knowing when I'm projecting and knowing when someone else is projecting. Mm-hmm. And maybe we're all just projecting on each other and then getting lost in that. So
I think that's definitely true, right?
Yeah, for me, I don't know if it's the same struggle for you.
Yeah, I think for me, I've found that, especially this year, this is something that I've definitely noticed in myself this year, is that it's when, like, if I'm upset and I don't address it immediately, then I then make up stuff in my head, or like I make up reasons for this happening, but it's not necessarily the real reason, but it's just what I've made up, and I connect dots, and that's when I start projecting. Whereas if I just nip it in the bud and like address it immediately, then I don't go into that spiral, I guess.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
I think it's like the dwelling, or like the more time on it, then it's like, you know.
Yeah, you're so right.
I don't know how to explain it, but I think it's just that. Okay. It's sort of like you should be having this conversation with another person, but instead you have the conversation in your head, and then you're making up what the other person is saying in your head, rather than just talking to them, and it's like different conversations.
I'm exactly like that.
Yeah. So I found that I think just speaking to the person you need to be speaking to immediately is the best way. But I don't always do it, honestly, because sometimes you're like too upset, or, you know.
Or you don't want confrontation. Yeah. Or you're talking about an authority figure.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, I feel this so much.
We try, right? We try. We'll try and improve. Yeah, we just try every day.
I mean, it's 2020.
I know. Oh my goodness.
I feel like 2020 has definitely improved our degree of resilience and patience and understanding, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think 2020 has given you more of?
Time, for sure, which has been nice, because I think I am someone who always feels behind. Not, I still feel extremely behind at the moment on like work stuff, on, I don't know, just everything. I just feel like I'm behind, but I'm trying to sort of remind myself that what is this timeline I've made up? I don't understand. So yeah, there's that. And then also, I think it's given me kind of a realization that there's a lot of things that I thought would be, what's the right word? Like there's things that I thought were necessary to achieve,
mm-hmm.
but that I realize I don't really care about actually.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that previously.
Yeah.
Yes. So you would say that 2020 gave you a lot more clarity.
Yeah, clarity, context as well, right? Like,
yeah.
How much do I care about, honestly, like even like a job? I mean, obviously a job is useful and it's nice to enjoy and money is good because you have to live. But I think just thinking about climbing ladders at work, I don't really care all that much about. It's something that I know I mentioned Gary Vaynerchuk before, but there are some things that he says that I think really resonate with me, which is one of those things that he says is that he thinks that basically happiness, right? It's just all about happiness. And if you're someone who's happy earning $40,000 a year because you're happy that it pays off all your bills, you get to go on holiday once a year, you get to spend loads of time with your family and you're not that stressed, why do you need to go around chasing more if the extra it gives you doesn't make you that much happier, if at all?
That's a good one.
And I think that's one of the things I've realized, that yes, obviously we all kind of have a standard of living and lifestyle that we are accustomed to and want to maintain and is what would make us feel most comfortable. But then I think about kind of in excess of that, what does that really mean to me? Does it matter all that much? I don't know. I don't think I've answered that completely, but I think it's just, I think I definitely am someone who feels safe and secure if I have like savings and a pot for a rainy day, all of that stuff, and a pot that I can dip in if I ever need to help like family members, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of also think that I don't think I can sell my soul for something that won't add that much to my life.
I like that 2020 has really given us time and basically forced us to reflect on the hard questions, like what is it exactly that makes us happy? And we have to reconsider now that for the most part, we're all stuck at home, and then we have to reevaluate what our priorities really are. And without, you know, the outside chatter of other people, the media telling us we should be like this, we should be like that, 2020 has forced us to ask ourselves, what is it that we really want? I feel like it's brought some intense reflection, which I guess is par for the course in terms of what the year is about. I can definitely say that I've had the same reflections, right? Coming off of the idea that 2020 is, okay, it's the pandemic, I just moved to Singapore, it might be a while for me to find a job, I better just accept things because it is what it is and just be happy and just try to make the best of everything. I mean, technically, I'm very fortunate. I mean, I'd still survive without a job, right? So I just decided and made the decision that, you know, I'll make the best of what I have instead of being actively miserable because I don't have some particular thing.
I think that's great, kind of a great realization to have, because that's something that not only is important in 2020, but if you ever run into any kind of challenges in the future that's similar, then it kind of, you've already had that realization and it'll make that easier as well. Do you think that you'll look back on 2020, and I don't know if this is a pointless question really, seeing as we're not in the future, but do you think that 2020, when you look back on it in the future, that this was a year for you of great change and maturity, or I don't know, enlightenment?
I don't feel it in myself, but 2020 feels like a pivotal year for sure, if only because it seems like it's ushered in a new chapter for me entering into 2021, where, you know, I have a job, and it took me so long before I could find a job, like I think almost 2 years. So I feel like definitely something internal must have changed for me to be able to finally step into a place where, you know, I have a job, but I might be speaking too soon. I mean, it might not work out. Who knows? But that's how I'm feeling. I definitely think that 2020 has a silver lining for me, and I appreciate that.
So what would you say was the silver lining specifically?
Getting to spend more time with my husband, because we were all stuck at home for most of the year. Being able to move to Singapore and learning how to ride a bike, and being able to finally let go of the desperation of having to find work and feeling worthless because I don't have a job. And not taking it personally because, you know, there's a global pandemic, times are going to be hard, and being able to appreciate what I have and learning to be in the moment. It's not a perfect process for me in terms of learning to stay present, but I feel like I have made progress in that area.
That's excellent. That's like a great almost side effect. Well, what's the best word? Side effect of 2020? Not really side effect, is it? It's like a great blessing in disguise kind of thing, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, of course, it's terrible that the pandemic is raging on. Yeah. And now there's a mutating virus, apparently, in the UK.
Yes.
Kirsty, stay safe.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's just sort of, we make the most with what we have, right? So, No, that's good, though. That's good that we are able to gain something from it when it is such a negative thing, right? But like the truth of everything, the truth of the matter is you can't not continue living your life because the world still is going on and everyone is trying to keep things afloat and keep things as normal as possible, and you can't kind of stand still and just let the world pass you by. Although, granted, obviously, whatever works for your like mental health and your sanity and your well-being, if you need time to pause, I think 2020 has been the time to chill and take it easy.
Yeah,
but I don't know, I think like you said, you just mentioned, with this new strain, with everything happening and new lockdowns being introduced, and like us here in the UK, loads of countries have barred us from traveling into their country because of this new strain. So it's like, it sounds like a restart, but I don't know.
It sounds like a forced Brexit.
I don't know.
It's like the world is saying, you guys are taking too long. We're going to help you.
I know.
That's such a terrible thing for me to say, but I couldn't resist.
It is, though. I did see someone talk about that and said that this was like a practice for Brexit.
Yeah, it's like this is what the public voted for. This is what they're getting.
Yeah. We shall see. We shall see what happens this year, next year. Oh,
I hope this doesn't turn into our own version of the Roaring Twenties.
Well, did you see those memes that said, oh, you know, the Roaring Twenties happened after the Great Depression?
Yeah.
And that meme that said, oh, watch out, like, in 2021, I'm going to be partying. Yeah, maybe that is what's going to happen. I can imagine that would be something that would happen. Like, I can imagine people just booking flights to everywhere and traveling and realizing, oh, I should have traveled when I had the chance. Yeah, I can imagine that being a huge thing, or people just being like wanting to see family and just traveling all over the world to see their family that they haven't seen for ages. I think air travel is gonna boom after.
I hope so. They've suffered a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you get a vaccine and you still need to socially distance and wear a mask, I'm not sure traveling would be a good idea so soon, even with a vaccine, right?
Yeah, I think it's kind of, because from what I understand, the way that the vaccine works is that it means that if you do catch the virus, you will have it less severely. Like, you won't get as sick. You won't have as horrible symptoms. Like, you'll get a much milder form of the disease. I think there was some suggestion that it might reduce how easily it is to transmit, to pass it on to someone. But I don't know that that's definitely true or has been properly looked at. Although I suppose that's something that they'll be monitoring the next year or 2 or 3 years. But even with this like new strain, all the advice that's already been given still remain as like the most important things. You wear a mask, you distance yourself from others, don't mix households, all of that stuff. That's still all the same.
So we talked about what COVID, oh, sorry, what 2020 gave us more COVID. Of. Yeah. What do you think 2020 could use more of? Or what do you think 2020 did not give us enough of?
I think for me personally, it's kind of family time, obviously, because I haven't been able to travel. So that's definitely something that is a low point of the year. But I mean, I'm also extremely grateful that my family is okay. They're safe. They're healthy, you know. I think that in 2020, and I don't know if this is just me personally or others have experienced this, but there have been, I'm not going to name people, try not to make them easily identifiable, but there have been people, like in a more professional setting, you know, people who I feel like would say things along the lines of, hope you're okay, take care of yourself with COVID going on, keep safe, stay healthy. You know, mental health is really important to us, to make sure like your health and well-being is good, you know, you're keeping positive, but also here's a list of all the deadlines that you have and when you need them by. Do you know what I mean? Kind of like that. Like there has been a lot of things where it's kind of just like what they're saying doesn't match the action.
Yeah.
And I don't know if people, if many people have experienced this in like a more, in a professional setting where whether it's your boss, your supervisor or whatever, or my supervisor isn't like this, by the way, so it isn't my supervisor. But like if you have a boss or, you know, someone, a manager who says to you, yeah, I it's important to us. Your mental health is important to us. We want you to take care of yourself. But then also in like the next sentence, they say to you that like you haven't been productive enough or you have all these deadlines or I don't know, there's a million and one things that you need to be doing. I think that there's a lot of people who just haven't followed through on the things that they're saying. If that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I feel like something similar has happened in the Philippines where there was somebody who was saying, and this was a popular post circulating where that person said, if you're an employee, you should work all the more harder as if you were the owner of the company, especially now that times are hard, you know, you should be lucky to have a job, stuff like that. Of course, entrepreneurs would share that because, you know, they need all that support. But at the same time, employees don't get the benefits. I mean, you know, it's like you're telling them to act like they're the owners of the company and be just as invested, if not more, for the sake of survival. But they don't get the benefits of being an owner of a company. So it's quite difficult to put that burden on them.
Yeah.
So yours might be, okay, it's like they say one thing and then expect another thing. But I feel like in the Philippines, at least to the extent that that post has been circulated, which has been a lot, there is that explicit expectation to work all the harder to kick in that survival instinct in order to make it through the pandemic. Times are hard in the Philippines. And I don't know if your small business owners in the UK are feeling that blow as well.
Yeah, I'm sure that people definitely are feeling the strain that 2020 has put on them, the pandemic, especially if you're sort of a restaurant, a pub, a club, you know, places that are just closed. Like there's no way people are going to be allowing them to congregate in like crowded areas, all of that. So it's just been closed. Theaters have suffered greatly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I definitely get that. But I, you know, what you were saying about that, where business owners, you know, expect their employees to care as much or more about their jobs and their work and the company than the owner would, just does not make any sense. I completely agree with you. Like, why do you expect someone else to be so invested in something that they don't get the rewards? Like, it's not proportional, it's not commensurate to what the expectation is. I don't know if you've seen this. I mention his name again. But Gary Vaynerchuk said this as well. I don't know if you've seen it.
No, probably not.
But that's pretty much what he says. You're expecting your employees to care so much about the work. But why would they? They don't own it. You do. You're the one who's supposed to care the most, right? You're the owner. You're the boss. You're the one who's supposed to care the most because this is yours and you're the one who gets paid the most. If you want them to care as much as you, then you need to give them a piece of the business. You need to give them a stake so that they care what the bottom line, like how successful the company is. Because if, especially if you're a salaried employee who gets the same amount every month, then what does it matter? It just doesn't make any sense to expect that much. For people to be that invested, to expect people to be that invested, it doesn't make any sense. I will disagree with that.
Yeah, we're in the same boat.
But then also, I think a lot of people, like you said, have that mindset that you should be so lucky to have this job. You should be thanking me that haven't fired you. And like, why? Why? You know, why? I think a lot of it is pride and ego. Or maybe I'd be a horrible employee. I don't know.
I wouldn't think of it that way. But I mean, I definitely wouldn't be as invested unless I own the business, right? And I feel like maybe that's why we get burned out so much, because we give so much. We just don't get that same kind of fulfillment in return, which I think is totally valid.
Can I tell you a short story about somewhere I used to work, and we had to do this like little project as a side thing. It wasn't part of work. It was just part of the younger, newer people would come together and then they'd have this little project as part of like the training in the business. Mm-hmm. And one of them was that we had this project where we had to look at like a global mobility program for the company, basically because the company had like offices in different parts of the world, but they were really struggling to get people who were based in the UK to agree to go to different parts of the world and help set up offices there or do like projects there, because they were just struggling to get people to go.
Mm-hmm.
So we did like a bunch of research. We interviewed people who've been and come back, people who decided to go, why did they decide to go, what made them go, did surveys and interviews of people who were thinking about going and what would make them finally decide to go, and then just kind of a company-wide questionnaire about just general feeling, right, of what kind of factors would be important for them to decide to relocate to another country, all of that stuff. And I was saying to, I think it was one of the vice presidents or something, where I kind of was saying that, because we were asking them, what kind of benefits do people get if they do decide to go? And the benefits are basically, you get your same salary and you get like an allowance, and then you also get a like a relocation package. But your salary pretty much stays the same. And then I was saying about, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why you're asking people to relocate, but then you're keeping their salary the same. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about like all of this around, I think I spent a lot of time with questions around money. Mm-hmm. And I was being told by people high up, like vice president level, saying that, well, we don't want people to do it for the money, because we want them to want to do it because they're excited about it, right? Which is like a mm-hmm. fair thing to want. But my point is, if you want people to relocate, and one of the things we were saying was, it's much easier to have someone young, like a, I don't know, like a 23, 24, 25 year old, to have them yeah. relocate much easier because they'll relocate on their own. But the downside is they're junior, right? They're junior in yeah. their experience. Mm-hmm. So you would also need to relocate someone who is a lot more senior, and it's much harder to get them to move because when they move, they want to take their whole family with them. And the yeah. point I was trying to make was that you have to offer them more money, because if you're going to ask this person to move across the world, ask their husband, their spouse, their wife, their partner to also leave their job, and then ask all the children to leave their home and their school mm-hmm. and move them across the world, and then they have to set up a whole new home, it costs a lot of money and stress. And
yeah.
there is no other way for you to kind of compensate for that, really, mm-hmm. apart from monetarily, right? But I think companies are sometimes so ideological in that they think people should just want to do it for the love of the job, which does not make any sense.
Yeah.
I just don't get it. So even though they love their work and they enjoy it and they like the field, if they're happy enough where they are, why would they move?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Not their life. Them
more money. Yeah. But I think, I don't know, maybe some people just are a little bit naive about the fact that, you know, a little extra money will help people sort of like in their lives in general, whether it's, you know, that extra money will help with when the kids go to college and university and stuff, or it means that they get more money for retirement, all of that. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm just trying to make a case for people to just pay other people more.
I mean, I think that's a good case to make.
I think people should just pay their employees more. But then also I say this as someone who currently is more on the employee side. Obviously, I don't have anyone working for me at the moment, right? So I don't know. Mm. Will I feel differently if I am the person who is the boss? I don't know. Probably.
Well, I think that's part of it, right? I mean, that's part of why we want that financial security and abundance. It's so we can spread it around. We don't want to have a business, if ever, that's like flailing. We want to be able to share that abundance with others and really build something great, I think. Of course, I'm being idealistic.
Yeah, I agree with you, though. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Something else that, oh yeah, go ahead.
No, just go on.
Something else that I read a lot of in 2020 is a lot of people appealing to their community to be kinder and more compassionate to the food delivery guys, the small business owners who are trying to stay afloat and sending food, because apparently they've gotten word that, you know, a lot of people, especially now, if there's something just a little bit wrong with their meal, they leave a 1-star review, which is not necessary in this day and age, completely not needed, especially in terms of restaurants doing their best. And then, you know, basically people should lower their standards a bit more, especially in the early stages of the pandemic where people were still just trying to adjust.
Mm-hmm. How often do you leave? Do you leave reviews and stuff?
I used to, just like for 3 restaurants that I didn't really enjoy. But that was a long time ago, like a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not someone who leaves reviews at all. Mm-hmm. If I don't like somewhere, I just don't go back. I don't tend to leave reviews about anything, whether it's positive or negative. Oh, actually, if you know how sometimes if you're ordering, when you go back to the app for instance, here, mm-hmm. Deliveroo or Uber Eats, sometimes they'll say how many stars, then I'll probably do that.
Yeah.
The thing about me is that I tend to only really order from places where, which I know I like. So I usually always just give a 5-star review.
Oh.
Because
you're the best customer.
It's because it's a place that I like. Like, I eat it because I like it. I'm not an adventurous food person. Mm-hmm. So I'm rarely ever trying something new. So mm-hmm. I tend to like the food that I pick. But then sometimes you can choose, like, how was the food? How was your delivery person? And how long did it take? Like, the time you had to wait? And I have complained before about things taking forever. Like, there was this one time we ordered something and it took 2 hours to get there when they said it would only take like 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept calling them because I was like, dude, it's 2 hours later. Like, I want to sleep. I don't even want this anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So something like that where it's kind of like, oh, it took forever. And then, yeah. But I don't know. I think that, yes, I do think that, especially for small businesses that we know are struggling and have had to make a lot of adjustments in order to stay afloat and to mm-hmm. abide by all the coronavirus rules and restrictions, then mm-hmm. I think we should be giving people like grace and space and time to adjust, because it's hard. I mean, if you just think about the places where you worked at, and for me as well, like the lab shut for 6 months just so that they could figure out how to reopen safely, right? And it's
6 months.
Yeah, we were shut for 6 months. Part of it was because, well, the rules came in, so they all had to close. And then when they thought about having to reopen, there was so much paperwork, because mm-hmm. pretty much in our labs, every single thing you have to do, even like you use acetone, for example. Sometimes I use acetone to clean my samples, but the acetone has a risk assessment associated with it.
Just for the pandemic?
No, that's just general working.
Oh, okay.
So every single thing, every single chemical you use, every single activity has a risk assessment associated with it that you have to comply with. And mm-hmm. then after coronavirus, every single risk assessment had to be updated to account for coronavirus restrictions. They all had to be approved. And then, you know, everyone had to have building inductions again and health and safety inductions to make sure everyone abides by the rules and knows the rules. And then some buildings have like one-way systems. So in the lab building that I work in, if you're going upstairs, you have to take the lift, the elevator, and if you're going downstairs, you take the stairs. And even mm-hmm. if you're going up and down only one floor, you go up in the lift, go down using the stairs, and it's like one-way system, you know, wear your masks, mm-hmm. all of that stuff. So
wow, that's pretty elaborate.
Yeah, it's very strict. And if people don't follow the rules, you could get kicked out from the mm-hmm. lab and you probably won't be allowed in for like a month or two. I don't know. Or they'll close down certain rooms because they take it really seriously and, you know, mm-hmm. liability and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, like, I kind of see how even like an institution like that, an establishment like that with so many people involved and who are doing the work, it just takes so long and it's just so tedious and it's so much work, and a small business owner has to do that all themselves. Like, it's just so hard.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely rethinking the idea of owning a business, especially now that I've had all this free time. Like, I don't think I want to do the same thing day in and day out, which is basically what owning a business is like.
Yeah.
I'm happy with the free time we have.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe I realized that's what's more important to me, time to myself. And that was a bigger priority than earning my own money, which I didn't realize before.
Can you expound?
Wherein I'm happy to have all this free time, just enjoying myself, being able to pick up an interest and then change course whenever I feel like it and not feel the burden of having to stick to one thing and having to push it along, so to speak.
I'm so happy you said that, because I know that you were really quite stressed about not sticking to something.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I do carry a lot of guilt about that, that I need to unravel. Also, I'm trying to accept that I'm not, you know, I'm just not like that. And maybe this is not really my guilt to carry, or it's not, maybe it's just conditioning that, you know, I just accepted without really thinking about it. And then, you know, I just have to reframe.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't think that we necessarily need to have just one thing we're good at or one thing that we enjoy, you know? Mm-hmm. If you think about it, like, life is just long. I mean, it's quite short when you think about it, but actually, you know, everyone's got time to explore and try things mm-hmm. out. And like, mm-hmm. you know, when you look at history and all these people who have, I don't know, accomplished so much and discovered huge things, even when you think about like Newton or, you know, the earliest scientists, it's like, oh, they weren't just one thing. They were like, oh, I was a philosopher and I was this and I was a painter and I was a, you know what I mean? And I was a lawyer and a politician and a pastor, like, and I also dabbled in this other thing. And it's kind of like professions. I think maybe it's because nowadays we have like professions and titles and like these lanes when it comes to employment that you go down. Whereas, you know, hundreds of years ago, it would have just been doing what you were interested in or what you thought you could be good at or what you thought you could contribute to. And then, I don't know, you could be an inventor. Like, can you imagine now being in school and your teacher asking you, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you say, I just want to be an inventor. And them being like, are you sure you don't want to be an engineer?
I have that too.
Right? And then you're like, yeah. No, I just want to make things. I want to be, you know, I just want to make stuff up and build things. And, you know, things that would in the past have been like a totally reasonable thing to pursue. Now it's like, are you sure you don't want to be, I don't know, a doctor? An accountant? I don't know.
Do you have any other reflection questions for 2020? I feel like we've kind of covered a good deal.
I guess I'm curious to know what your goals are in 2021. What sort of things have you learned in 2020 or realized that you would like to work on further in 2021? Oh. Or things that you kind of want to pursue based off of what you've learned in 2020?
I think I just want to really be more consistent in taking better care of myself and having more compassion for myself, treating myself like I would a friend, because I feel like my internal dialogue doesn't match that. I just really want to be more consistent about it, release any fixations that I might have on triggers or people that trigger me. I feel like that's my biggest thing. Now that I'm starting a new job, I think, you know, really learn some confidence in myself and getting that confidence by attaining mastery. So I feel like I'm starting all over, and I just want to enjoy the journey and be mindful about enjoying the journey. And I mentioned about, you know, catastrophizing and to do less of that and be more open, be more in the flow, and I guess, and just surrender to whatever life brings, I guess. Hopefully it's nothing bad.
Yeah.
I mean, if we survive the pandemic, right?
I know.
That's a big accomplishment.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Like, just stay healthy, right?
Yeah. That's how about you?
I think it's kind of similar to what you were saying earlier. I think kind of just being more consistent in the things that I enjoy, doing more of the things I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Because for sure, the more I do the stuff I enjoy, the more I also enjoy the stuff that I don't enjoy as much, if that makes sense.
Oh.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's it does.
Like, yeah. So I don't know. I think when I do more of the stuff that I enjoy, all the other stuff, it makes it easier to do all the other stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's purely because I'm just in a better mood. I just feel more awake, more energetic, that kind of thing, you know. For me, anyway, personally, when I am just in a generally better mood and I'm happier in general and I'm in a more positive mental state in general, then everything else is just, it's just easier.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think that's one of the things. One of the things that also I'm trying to, and this is like really, maybe this is too much information. I do not know. But I think kind of just from like a health perspective, trying to just get my PCOS, endometriosis, like all the girly issues that I have that have kind of in the past been a struggle and over the last year or two has just been kind of improving in some ways, but kind of just get that all kind of leveled out. I don't know. I think my hormones are all over the place. So kind of just getting that just better. You know what I mean? Just I think that just needs to be better as well. Because I think that has affected things like energy levels for me for sure. Yeah. So there's that. And I think that if I focus on just generally being, you know, moving a little bit more, just being more positive, just being happier, then I think things just kind of might just fall into place. I don't know. I think just general health and well-being is a main thing because...
Same.
Yeah, because I think
that... So much more important now.
For sure. Yeah, yeah. I agree 100%. So yeah. Plus, I'm not getting any younger.
Yeah, 2020 really reminding us of the real priorities.
Yes, yes. Sometimes I think, oh no, how old am I? And I'm just like, oof. Like do I want a kid? You know what I mean? And then I think, oh, but then I've also got all these like female reproductive health issues around my PCOS and hormones and stuff. So before I even think of that, then I need to get that under wraps. Mm-hmm. Like get that sorted out. Just so I'm like as healthy as possible. So yeah, I think the time to really kind of look into that and focus on that is 2021. So that is, I think, one of my focuses for next year, in addition to like, you know, my PhD work and stuff. So yes, I think overall balance, I think, might be one of the things.
Mm. Yeah, especially with so many people saying that they actually work more these days, being connected 24/7, there's just no delineation anymore between the work and the personal, especially since they're all happening from the same place, which is at home.
Yeah, I agree. So it's been hard for me to, in the evening, an email comes in, it's been hard for me to not then pick up my laptop and work on that. So that's definitely something I want to stop doing in 2021, where I get my weekends back and not work so much at the weekends, and kind of giving myself a cutoff in the evenings, where like my evenings can start and I don't look at stuff anymore, and I'm not checking emails before bed. I don't think it's helpful. But yeah, one of the things that I did, because I was so behind on my emails, I had like over 70 emails that I needed to go through last Saturday, and I finally finished all of them on Sunday. I did all that, sorted out my to-do list for when I come back, the first week I come back in January, and then I set an out of office, and I just said, you are not going to get a reply. I basically said, I will reply when I come back in January. And I deleted like the Outlook app from my phone so I don't check, because it's definitely a habit that I check my emails on my phone. So I just deleted it and I don't check it because it's not there. So yeah, I think that'll be good for me for the next couple weeks. I think something that I'll also do is I'll probably stop going on my phone so much, except to speak to like friends and family, like you, my family, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely feel that I quickly turn into a zombie when I start scrolling on Instagram and then the day just disappears. It's a black hole.
Because I was just going to say that for me, I never scroll through the newsfeed, actually. Is it called newsfeed? No, the Instagram feed. I never scroll through it. Like, I don't. If your photo doesn't show up as, like, the top two or three photos in the feed, I won't see it again. But I look at stories. Stories are what I enjoy looking at.
I do both, and I can easily get lost in them. You know, I feel like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna, you know, I need a break. I just need 5 minutes, and then it turns into an hour.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's definitely a time suck.
Do you follow Bretman Rock on Instagram?
No, should I?
Yeah, I recommend it. He's one of my favorite people to watch on Instagram. Nice. Stories. Because he's just, like, unbothered, living his best life, no drama. That's nice. It's like, in the morning, he just goes, he tells everyone, good morning, with swear words in there. Nice. And then he just shows what he does all day. And I mean, obviously, he does work as well, but he just shows he's just rollerblading, he's feeding his animals, he's got, like, these chickens that live nearby that he feeds. He's got all his
plants. He lives in Hawaii, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and he's just it. Like, okay.
He's just living his best life, which I love.
Nice. Yeah, it's great.
You know, just like one of these people who are just completely unbothered.
That is my number one goal in life, I suppose.
Unbothered.
Because I'm bothered by everything.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm sure he is. But I think he just seems so, like, centered and so sure of himself that...
I would love that energy in 2021.
That's a good one. I'll just do... What is your word for 2021? Unbothered.
That's perfect.
I know.
Can I use that too?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's perfect.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of For a While. Catch you in the next one. Bye.